W252 DR Oshkosh and WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. More infrastructure funding from the bipartisan law passed last year. President Biden in New York City announcing money to repair the Hudson River tunnels, linking New York City with New Jersey, along with funds to upgrade Amtrak rails.
That's this project and others like it across the country are all about, making investments in America's cities and towns, in America's heartlands, in the rural areas as well. It's about making things here in America again.
President says the tunnel project will create 72,000 jobs. Winter storms are creating new troubles for residents from Texas to the Midwest. Ice and snow are leading to power outages and flight cancellations and delays. More than 1,400 flights have been grounded today. Embattled Congressman George Santos is recusing himself from two of his committee posts. He's facing several probes, including an investigation into his campaign finances. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy called it the appropriate thing to do. This is ABC News. A new large-scale study looking at the risk of dementia for those over 60 shows many diet and lifestyle decisions could impact someone's chances of developing memory loss or Alzheimer's disease. ABC Chief Medical Correspondent Dr. Jennifer Ashton tells us what lifestyle choices made the biggest impact on participants.
Alcohol was a big one, and the people who did the best in this study never consumed alcohol. Diet was actually the biggest factor, and again, healthy diet, lots of vegetables, and low saturated fat. Cognitive activity, which would be something like reading or playing cards, and then social contact, even chatting online, meeting with friends. People who engaged in those behaviors did really, really well as we age.
San Francisco officials are asking state authorities to slow down the rollout of driverless taxis. During tests in the city, some users reported robo-taxis stopping for no apparent reason. Results of the test could determine how quickly other cities move ahead with driverless cabs. Brian Clark, ABC News.
If Friday nights mean fish fries, we're your station. Civic Media for the Fox River Valley.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I'm Jane Matnair. Here's what you need to know. The new chair of Wisconsin's Republican Party is a fan of early voting. Brad Schimming tells Wisconsin Public Radio Republicans need to do things differently to win future elections in the state and is encouraging Republicans to vote early. Absentee voting has become commonplace since the COVID-19 pandemic. Republicans also say they need to do a better job at fundraising to compete with Democrats here. The GOP rewrote Wisconsin's campaign finance laws in 2015, allowing political parties to accept unlimited donations. Schimming says he does not see that going away. If you've got icy sidewalks, using salt isn't going to matter with temperatures below zero. The extreme cold makes it harder for salt to break down the water molecules in the ice. Too much ice melt is already impacting our waterways. Experts recommend chopping through the ice instead. I'm Jane Matnair for Civic Media News.
You wanted information as election results rolled in, and the Civic Media Network of radio stations delivered it live.
I was so impressed with your coverage. And I listened to you guys, and I got all the coverage. It was amazing.
Civic Media, the only network with news reporters and show hosts stationed across Wisconsin, sharing political insight not found anywhere else. Elections or anytime, we are here for you. Your local Civic Media radio stations and streaming on the Civic Media app.
I love working on my cars, but I wish I had more space for my shop.
Give General Steel a call. In business for over 30 years and with over 5,000 five-star customer reviews, General Steel can help with projects ranging from RV storage and garages to churches, workshops, and even major construction for Fortune 500 companies. And all General Steel custom buildings are backed by our 50-year warranty.
But that's got to cost a fortune.
Actually, General Steel buildings are more affordable than other building options. And thanks to our highly efficient construction, you can go from dreaming it to enjoying it in no time.
I need to give the General a call. How do I get more information?
Call 866-96-STEEL or visit mygeneralsteel.com to find out what General Steel can do for your home or business. That's 866-96-STEEL. Our team will answer your questions and offer you a customized quote. Just call 866-967-8335 now or mygeneralsteel.com.
Speaker Voss, I understand you don't have any children. Does that mean he's been possibly practicing
sex with
contraceptives?
What?
Or is he just less than a man? How do you go through the entire life three wives later and no chitlins?
Shooting blanks?
Perhaps.
Pull and pray.
Doubtful.
Not getting any.
Unlikely.
Unable to perform.
More likely.
Paying for it.
I hate to judge.
We don't judge here. We're the Devil's Advocate.
Listen to the Devil's Advocates live weekdays from 3 to 6 p.m.
Governor Tony Evers, Tim Michaels said you had gone, quote, full woke. Dr. Jill Underlie said that somebody who says that has no idea what we're doing in schools to make sure kids feel safe.
We want to make sure all kids feel supported. Tim Michaels, we don't teach CRT in our schools. You got to come to the present century here, Tim, and be cognizant of what actually goes in the schools. My guess is you've never been in a public school in Wisconsin.
Up North News Radio with Pat Krylo airs at its new time from 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays across Civic Media.
From Green Bay to Oshkosh and Point South, wherever you are in the Fox Valley, count on us to keep you connected, informed, and entertained. Civic Media.
Keeping the Fox Valley connected, informed, and entertained, this is Civic Media.
Driving on the baseline, tries to pass it out, but he steps out of bounds and goes a little wild. And they're going to rule it a foul on Carter. It's his fourth foul. And so Moroz does a lob over to Karinko on the inbound. Karinko goes over to Tyron. Tyron, left side of the key, or right side of the key, he drives in. He just jumps over. Again, just jumps right over Thompson, and it's another layup. 59-46 now. Carter Combs takes it up the court. They're passing it around. Carter to... And that is... I can't quite see. That's LaVale. Carter LaVale from the top of the key for three. And LaVale makes it. He's lighting up at the end of the game here.
3:20 left in the game. Black shirt's 59.
I mean, if they can... he's already shot. He's already made two of those in a row. So if he can get three of those, we can be a one-point game. This game's a little bit closer, 10-point differential with 3 minutes left. If Daniel misses these, they may have a chance to get it within single points, but he doesn't. They still do. If they get a two, they'll be down by nine. But if they're able to get it down to single point, then that could put them in a better position, winding the game down. But he makes it, and so they're up by 12. Carter Combs has the ball right now, taking it up the court, goes over to Dom Hill. Dom Hill drives, and he gets just swatted by Karinko. Dom held his face back there. I think he did get hit in the face. It looked like he got right hit directly in the face by Karinko, but the refs just missed it. And there's another foul on Carter, a Carter on Daniel. I mean, they're being really hard on West with these fouls, been paying no mind to the obvious foul by which we just saw. I mean, the refs are can't go too hard at high school, you know. But Daniel's at the line. And they sub in Kale BD for Carter LaVale. And looking at the West team, half of their lineup is still in their warm-up shirts. So it's looking like they didn't decide to go deeper into their lineup this game. And so those key players are fouling it out now. Number three takes out the court, Connor. Connor passes it into Jake Thompson, and he drives and gets a foul. I can't. Yeah, and it's a block. It's a blocking foul on Tommy Karinko, and so it's his third foul. Jake Thompson's going to go to the line after being fouled by Karinko. Right now, your black shirts lineup is looking like Tyron at point, Daniel at shooting guard, Ethan Check at small forward, Moroz at power, and Garinko at center. Tyron gets the rebound after the missed free throw by Jake Thompson, and they call a timeout. Looking to plan something for this final 3 minute stretch here. And so we'll be back after a couple of sponsorships.
27% of the American workforce, and some even say 30%, were in unions who had representation and who clearly did not have to worry about whether or not they were going to get their fair share. But I'm definitely going to fight for people who get the short end of the stick in this society only because they don't have representation. That's who I am.
Check out the Earl Ingram Show every day from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. only on WAUK 540 a.m. 101 FM, The Shaw.
Hey, this is Don Brown inviting you to get local with me every Saturday morning, 8 o'clock, on my show, This Week in Waukesha, live from the office of former Alderman Don Paul Brown. Local news, local sports, local people, local music and culture. This Week in Waukesha, every Saturday, 8 a.m., here on Walk Radio, 540 a.m., 101 FM. The Shaw.
We are back with your local broadcast of Waukesha Black Shirts high school basketball. In the final 3 minute stretch here, the score is 62-50 Black Shirts right now. The Black Shirts have been playing fantastically against West. Very little turnovers, only I think two or three. Two on Karinko and then one on Staub. And they've been making their free throws. Tyron and Daniel are having a fantastic night. The supporting players are committing to those key roles. Only problem is, you know, our continuous problem in the paint, but we've been able to make up with an impressive performance from three-point tonight as Charlie Moroz has 12 points directly from threes. And Tyron makes those two free throws, putting this game 64-50. Jake Thompson takes it up the court and passes it over to Evanson, and or not Evanson, but Kale Ide. And Kale Ide, he travels on the spin move. So Moroz takes it in Tyron. Tyron just races down the court faster than everyone. Karinko's wide open for three, but he doesn't want to take it. He goes up to Robinson and resets the play. There's double teaming, but Robinson sees it. He sees it a mile away and goes the opposite way. And Tyron's right there. He passes it over to him and a free layup for Tyron. That's another score. So now this leads at 66. It's looking like they're, or not at 66. Their score is 66. Their lead's at 16. It's looking like they're running away with this thing entirely. Don tries to go for a three, but he misses it. Tyron does a football pass for some reason and gets stolen pretty easily. Carter Combs drives all the way in, but just does not make the layup. It's wide open. Now they're fouling. They're fouling. 1:43 left in the half. 66-50. Looking like this is just practice here, since I don't think they're going to be able to pull off any late-game magic here to spontaneously reduce that deficit. So it's looking like they're just fouling for practice. I guess we can call this game now, start talking about our thoughts and wrapping up the broadcast. Jake Thompson gets the rebound. He drives in. Passes it over to Ide, who drives back in. And he misses the shot, but he gets fouled. And that foul's on Karinko. Karinko hasn't had the best game. It's been mostly carried by your two-star guards. Number of fouls and a number of turnovers for Karinko. And missed shots. It's uncharacteristic of him. because he's a centerpiece in rebounding and also a centerpiece in those unpredictable three-point shots, especially since he plays center very well. So both free throws are made, and so the inbounds on Tyron. Tyron races down the court. Another wide open three for Kurenko, but Kurenko passed it out to Robinson. Exact same structure, exact same move. He drives out of the double team, but he decides not to pass it, or not to drive in and get the easy bucket. He passes it. I guess they're playing pretty lethargically considering 121, 66, 52. Johnny, what are you thinking about this game?
Well, I'll tell you what, it's turning out just exactly the way Don Brown said it was going to, you know.
Yeah, I was being a little bit nice. Right now, it's 67. They're up by 15.
You got 67 to 52, and there's a minute 21 left. Don called it before it started, and, you know, it's just turned out that the Black Shirts are just a little too good for this.
And honestly, as much as I want to celebrate their win tonight, I think it is because of the separation of the programs. You know, a lot of the other conference teams that we play usually have completely, you know, citywide comprehensive programs. So they get that citywide funding and they get that citywide talent pool. Whereas Waukesha doesn't have that because of three separate schools. And so West has a pretty deep lineup, but they're not playing. And so if South's problem is that they don't have a lot of players, I think West's problem is that, you know, they have a number of players that show interest, but they're just not able to integrate them really well into the system. And so, yeah, I mean, it's a good win. It's a good win on South. Yeah, but on the same time, I think that, you know, I think that South, at least from the perspective of a South fan, I think, you know, our focus should still be on trying to get some of those out of conference wins. But they're taking out their starting squad and putting in some of their bench players, some of the other players they haven't given any time to for the entire game, and they put it in 2 seconds left. I've always found this to be kind of annoying, honestly, when coaches do this. I understand it. You know, you want to get them some time. We'll get them some practice. But, you know, if you're down, I don't know, 20 points with 7 minutes left to go, unless one of your players goes on like a 10, like unless your team goes on a 10-0 run, which you haven't because there's only one player that's scoring really well, it's better just to replace them then to give those players a bit more time, those kids a bit more time. 52 seconds really isn't that much time to get that experience or to practice any preset plays or anything.
Yeah,
but
how do you really feel, Connor?
Yeah, I mean, no, that's pretty much how I really feel. Entirely new lineup. It'd take me a minute to go and name all the figure out all of the separate players for this new lineup for West, but it's looking like they have number 4, Sam Cook, in at point. At shooting guard, they have number 12. Mayan Acevedo Ethier. Number 44 at small forward, Nate Stoic Jr. And then number 24, Brady Catarazzo. And that's their lineup. South had put in their alternate lineup as well. Oh, and so that's Giovanni Rios Ibarra who's in. They're just putting in all the guys, and he's driving. Evan Stout gets the ball wide open from a pass from Ibarra, but he doesn't shoot it and passes it over to. Passes it out. Missed shot. They get a rebound. Sam Cook takes it back and gets a shot right before the buzzer to finish the game. The final score is 70-59. 11-point differential. I was 1 point off. So I was closer than you, Don. You said blowout. I said 10 points. I was nice, and it paid off. So
yeah, well, you know, it was a lot of fun being here tonight, and I saw a great game, you know. The South played real nice basketball.
Yeah, it was a beautiful game on South's end. Another spectacular performance by our main stars, Tyron Cook and Daniel Robinson, who finished the game plus 20 points respectively. I kind of lost track at the end there, but that's one thing you're better at me than me at, Don, keeping score, because I get so caught up in there, and they're beautiful, magnificent movements that it's hard for me. But yeah, it's a great game. I'm hoping to see if they're going to continue this momentum in their next game on Thursday. I think they just played well on all fronts, but like I said, those problems, those internal, operational or school board problems, I think are more of a highlight. Cause I mean, in games like this, I mean, it's kind of the same thing. It's not exactly the same thing, but it's a similar circumstance with what's happening in football as well. And this is the second game that West has played where we've blown them out. And so I'm hoping over the next couple of seasons, the talent, you know, as South continues to grow and continues to get better players and more experience and more just useful players, especially with all the talent they have in their JV lineup. Let's just hope, you know, the talent pool doesn't get too different to the point where we're having a similar issue in basketball with West as we are with South in football in the next couple of years, because this was a blowout, and it was. And but it does reflect really well on the black shirt program.
That was good.
And yeah, it was a beautiful showing by Charlie Moreau tonight. Charlie, in whom usually doesn't put up a lot of points, scored about 15 today with four threes and then a couple of free throws. And so that's the career high, or that's the season high for him right now. And along with that, we have Tyron Cook and Daniel Robinson, who scored magnificently. And they pretty much carried the bulk of scoring in this game. And so, yeah, any final thoughts, any last words on this basketball you've just witnessed, Johnny?
Well, I'll tell you, my final thought here is I thought the crowd was really well behaved. You know, I was thinking it was going to be a little more riffraff, but everything went real smooth. And on behalf of Civic Media, mm-hmm. everybody that helped out here, Kelvin, Connor, everybody in the background, this is Johnny Watermelon saying thank you for listening in, and we'll see you next time.
All right, we'll see you. This has been WAUK's broadcast of Waukesha Boys High School Basketball Black Shirts. We'll be back on Thursday at 6:30. Come back and support your black shirts.
Great coverage, guys. See you on Thursday.
All right. Thank you. Thanks, Calvin.
Kelvin, can you still hear me?
Yes, I can.
Do I get a hot mic, or are you just me and you private?
It's hot.
Okay.
I can add the Facebook meeting, though.
No, it's all right, man.
Okay.
Yeah, I just want to thank you. You did a great job. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
You did. Right. Thank you, Kelvin.
Yep. Right. See you later.
Yeah.
Enough people out of a small amount of money, that's great. They each have to individually sue you. They can't come collectively and file a class action. I got to wonder if some of this plays into it. But here again, you know, this is where having a union is important. How many companies out there do this to their employees? Oh, it's computer snafu. Oh, we'll get you next week. Oh, we'll get you down the road. Or you never get it. And I had one of these moments this past weekend where my oldest daughter, you know, said, hey, you know, I got a friend who's got a question. They feel that they're being cheated. They don't know what to do. They work for this company where the boss, you know, has them come in early, makes them set things up, doesn't pay them, makes them work through their lunch, takes a half hour lunch out of their paycheck, but never gives them the opportunity to take the lunch. There's all this stuff. So I talked to the friend and I said, look, this is your recourse without a union. Without having a union representative, there's really, without a contract, there's very little that you can do without being direct, without standing up to the employer. Go to the HR, say, hey, you're cheating me. Make a stance there. Go to the state, the wage and hour folks, and say, look, this is wage theft. But this This means that the individual has to take on this massive corporation. The individual has to take on these powers, and most people don't. So the majority of people who get cheated out of wages, who are victims of wage theft, they do so as, it's just the cost of doing business. What am I going to do? You can't fight these big companies. You can't fight it. And it's one of these things where you go, well, what is wage theft? You know, if you work overtime and you don't get time and a half, that's wage theft. If you're misclassified as an independent contractor, you're your own boss, but the person is telling you what to do, where to do it, how to do it, when to do it, you're an employee. You're just not being paid like one. Anything on the minimum wage front, if you're not getting paid minimum wage, that. Anything if you're working and you're not being paid. For instance, you got to come in a half an hour early and set up. No, that's on your dime. No, you're going to work through your lunch. No, you're going to work through your breaks. No, you're going to work and not get paid. It's wage theft. And what we know is, according to statistics, we know that all of the stick-em-ups, all of the people walking into a bank or a gas station or a convenience store or anything, any of them, give me your monies. Wage theft outweighs that in multiples. And yet we don't spend enough time talking about it. So this Kroger case is more important to me than just the workers at the supermarket. It's about all those silent people throughout industry after industry who are being treated like this. It's a new system mistake. And the question is, how many people miss 15 minutes, half hour? That's what they're hoping. They're hoping they can cheat you on the ends. And what's frustrating is we've learned to take it. That's the part that's amazing to me. For all of the complaining that's out there, and like I said earlier, I spent time, listening to the trolls. And the trolls bashing unions. Oh, unions are horrible. Unions are no good. We don't need unions anymore. And yet we know wage theft is an enormous problem. We know working conditions and danger in a lot of working conditions. Huge problem. We're seeing these stories coming out of employers just horribly treating people, firing them via email or text, or just a complete dehumanization of work. And you go, unions don't matter anymore. Workers coming together and saying, we want decent treatment. We want to be treated with respect. We want the agreement that we made to be honored. See, that's the interesting part of all this. The money behind all of these troll farms, same money behind all of the union busting. Because the last thing that corporations want, the last thing the wealthy want are empowered workers. The last thing that the elites of this country want are people who are empowered to say, you know what, I want to share the economic pie. You don't hear that from the trolls. What you hear is how we divide. How we go after those people. Instead of saying, hey, how do we make sure everyone can raise a family? How can we make sure that everyone can put food on the table? How do we make sure that work matters and is rewarded? We hear the other stuff. We hear the divisive. We hear the destructive. Because my Twitter friends, my troll friends, they're destroyers. And again, I go back to this idea of uniting with destroyers. You can't do it. So the advice I gave to my daughter's friend was, first call your HR department and see what happens. Say, look, this is what I'm told. I got to take a lunch. They're taking it out of my check. I don't have time. I need to take my lunch. Or you need to pay me. And if that doesn't rectify the situation, you want to do it nicely, then you've got to go to the state and say, look, and maybe talk to your other coworkers and see if it's happening to them and organize around the idea that collectively you come together and you go to the state and say, this is a systematic problem of this company that's cheating us. And this person's like, I don't know that I can do that. There was this tension, this fear. That fear, that feeling, that's what corporations want. That's when they know they've won. And they've spent a lot of money to achieve this on union busters who every time there's an organizing campaign come in and harass and intimidate and threaten and fire people illegally. They don't care about the law. And it puts us in our place. So the question I keep coming back to, instead of being a Twitter troll and saying, oh, eggs, how about we hold these companies accountable? How about we come together and organize around
the
news and talk up, down, and all around the Fox Valley, Civic Media.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. More infrastructure funding from the bipartisan law passed last year. President Biden in New York City announcing money to repair the Hudson River tunnels, linking New York City with New Jersey, along with funds to upgrade Amtrak rails.
That's this project and others like it across the country are all about, making investments in America's cities and towns, in America's heartlands, in the rural areas as well. It's about making things here in America again.
President says the tunnel project will create 72,000 jobs. Winter storms are creating new troubles for residents from Texas to the Midwest. Ice and snow are leading to power outages and flight cancellations and delays. More than 1,400 flights have been grounded today. Embattled Congressman George Santos is recusing himself from two of his committee posts. He's facing several probes, including an investigation into his campaign finances. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy called it the appropriate thing to do. This is ABC News.
You're listening to a radio station that's part of the Civic Media Network. Find more at civicmedia.us.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. A man suspected of killing two women in Green Bay is arrested in Arkansas. The women's bodies were found inside an Eastside apartment Sunday morning. Police say evidence of the scene made them think right away the suspect had headed south. In fact, Arkansas police caught him in a traffic stop by mid-afternoon. Police say double homicides are rare in Green Bay. PFAS pollutants are getting lawmakers' attention. A state Senate committee is holding a hearing today on proposed regulations for the forever chemicals. They're used to make a lot of useful plastic products, but they're polluting Wisconsin soil and water. Right now, PFAS are not regulated in Wisconsin. Governor Evers, for one, says he wants to change that. In sports, the Bucks host Charlotte tonight. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
You wanted information as election results rolled in and the Civic Media Network of radio stations delivered it live.
I was so impressed with your coverage. And I listened to you guys and I got all the coverage. It was amazing.
Civic Media, the only network with news reporters and show hosts stationed across Wisconsin, sharing political insight not found anywhere else. Elections or anytime, we are here for you. Your local Civic Media radio stations and streaming on the Civic Media app.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
This is Pat Greitlow from Up North News Radio. On the air, online, or on demand, make it a point to catch the first word on Wisconsin news, sports, and more weekday mornings from 6 to 8 all across the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
It is the Monday after the first Packers game, and I think everyone right now is licking their wounds.
But I do love that you're leading with The Bears Still Suck as the intro song. I mean, we're already on to week two.
Why are we not good at the season opener?
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Always on the Civic Media app.
And intentionally bringing the evil of bigotry, intolerance, and even fascism in from the fringe of politics to sit in the seat of power. This is Jim Hightower saying, this is shameful and it's dangerous. Evil swarms when so-called leaders meekly give permission for crazies to use the government power to rule over us.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, a new morning consult poll out. And it's one of those ones you go, I know you do these polling because you want to get a sense of where people are, but not surprising here. Not surprising at all. It found that 57% of registered voters support the idea of revoking China's permanent normal trade relation status. 57% actually seems low to me. And I think the more we talk about this and the more I explain just how bad it has been, the more I expect that number to go up. Now, the reason that this has been taken and the reason that this is on the table is you got a couple of Republican senators who have come forth with the idea of doing just that, and about time. Maybe they've been listening to the show. Maybe. This is something I've been calling for a while. And here to share some thoughts on, what the Republican senators have in mind, what it might look like, and, where it could take us. I've asked our good friend Scott Paul to come talk with us. Scott is the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, their website. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick. It is great to be with you this evening, as always.
So let's start with this bill that I guess Rick Scott from Florida, yeah. Vance from Ohio, I guess you've got Tom Cotton, Bud from North Carolina. They've come forth and said, hey, we want to undo this. What does their legislation say at this point? What do they want to do?
Yeah, so there's a feature in trade law called permanent normal trade relations, or PNTR. Sounds very confusing. It is a little bit. But basically, countries that get this get the guaranteed lowest tariff rate for their imports coming into the United States of America without any review at all. And so, you know, this is generally reserved for countries that we have strong relationships with and that abide by the rule of law. Unfortunately, China has had this status since 2000, okay? And it was part of the terms of entry for China to get into the World Trade Organization. And these senators were like, this is a bad idea. We don't think we should do this. I will say this is not a new idea. I mean, I've thought that we ought to be revoking this for about the last 15 or almost 20 years.
I've actually been the last 23 years.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was a bad idea from the beginning.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, I have a big poster at home that says no blank check for China, which is aged pretty well over those 23 years. You're right. But also, like, I think Ro Khanna and a couple of progressive Democrats suggested doing this last Congress, too. So this is something that should have some bipartisan appeal. But so basically what this would do, it would say, China, you're back up to a higher tariff rate on your products that, by the way, aren't already subject to punitive tariffs that we've put on some Chinese products, on their steel, on other products through a trade law provision called Section 301. And China would basically have to earn its status back, and the Congress would have to vote to give it back, which I don't know that a lot of lawmakers would want to do. Also worth pointing out that we have revoked permanent normal trade relations for other countries before. In fact, there was a bipartisan vote in the Senate to revoke it for Russia, 100-0. I mean, I don't know anything that's passed 100-0, but that did. So, and look, not that China has invaded a country yet, but we also know that the economic, cyber, military, other types of aggressive moves that China is making bear some scrutiny. In addition, and you referenced this, Rick, to the 23 years of destruction because China hasn't been following the rules at all, and what that's meant to U.S. industrial capabilities, to the middle class in this country. And so yeah, I think that this is a you know something that the Senate ought to do.
No, I agree. But here's the thing. You know, one of the things I've been talking about Biden about it, and that I'm happy about, is the policy of moving us away from, you know, the kind of globalization that we've become accustomed to over the last couple of decades. This idea that, you know, countries that trade don't fight each other. No, they just fight each other on different grounds. I mean, we're still at war. I believe we're at war with China and have been for a very long time. It's just been an economic war. And they've been, well, they've been kicking our behinds because we've given away our manufacturing. It's not even like we lost it. We gave it away.
Yeah, we sure did. And the interesting thing, Rick, I think about this is that, you know, unlike other kind of conflicts we've had in the past, whether they were hot or cold, you know, we normally haven't been coupled to that economy. Like we were not coupled to the Soviet economy or to the Korean economy in the 50s or to the Vietnamese economy or the Iraqi economy, although, you know, the oil companies certainly liked getting stuff out of there. But we are coupled to the Chinese economy. And that is that brings a whole nother level of consideration. And this is where I think Biden has been pretty strategic, is that, you know, seeing a need to unwind a lot of this, particularly where we have vulnerabilities like in semiconductors and high technology, and saying we got to take the first steps to make sure that we're not handing China the keys to the car here, and that we have some of our own capabilities. And so we're building that up at the same time. But it takes a degree of, I think, policy sophistication that we didn't have to necessarily have for some of these other conflicts, whether they've been hot or cold, that we've experienced in the post-World War II era.
No, and to point that out, I mean, you know, imagine, you know, during the Cold War, if we were buying, you know, communications gear from the Soviets. I mean, you know, the Biden administration right now evidently is considering cutting off Huawei technologies from being able to access American suppliers like Intel and Qualcomm. And you go, explain to me why it is we do business with them with all on this level, and how it is that they get their technology into any of our military supply is well beyond my capability to understand.
Yeah. Yeah. And part of it is, I mean, it's a complex question, and there's complex answer to it. And there's a lot of different factors, but one of them has been that we too often, from either a governmental, a corporate, or even a consumer perspective, have been willing to look the other way, and have turned a blind eye to some of the challenges that all of this represent. And part of the reason, Rick, is that it has been too good to be true, right? That low price that you get, too good to be true. And so that does, as we've learned, carry some cost with it that just maybe not reflected in that T-shirt at Walmart, but it's been reflected in many, many other ways, from that loss of capability to more carbon emissions to building up potentially an adversarial military power. And so now we're at a point of reckoning. And I think that's what the challenge is. And, you know, everybody who was saying, oh, this whole China experiment, this is going to be awesome. And believe me, that was like 90% of national politicians and virtually all of the national media, you know, 23 years ago. Now, most of them are saying, you know what, didn't work out. Sorry. But the answer isn't to do things like repeal PNTR. It's to try harder. And I just, that baffles me somewhat to hear that, because it is wishful thinking. And that's what got us into this mess in the first place. So I think we have to be very strategic, very conscious of what lies ahead. But part of this, part of this uncoupling of key technologies, key sectors, is going to be very important. And we certainly, I don't think that the Chinese Communist Party deserves the lowest tariffs we have to offer a country that we don't have a free trade agreement with. And so I think that's a huge mistake. And that's something simple that we ought to be able to take off.
No, and it's something that should be nonpartisan. And again, I come back to this idea of uniting the country. This should be one of those things that unites us around the idea of reshoring manufacturing, ensuring our military gets what they need, ensuring that we have jobs in communities that support family. This sounds like, well, the stuff that would unite us.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it would. And my hope is that, Well, first of all, the four Republican senators who introduced this don't have the ability to move it on their own. And so at this point, it's kind of a message bill. So the key is going to be, where do we see some of the Democratic kind of China hawks in the Senate? What do we see in the House of Representatives? Are the House Republicans going to move on this? Or are they just going to say, hey, we have this committee, we're looking at everything, and in the meantime, we're going to park everything else? It's going to be interesting to see what happens, but I do think that it sends the right signal.
Yeah. It's an excellent point you make, though, that this is a message bill, because it's telling that these Republicans, who I find, to be honest, policy-wise on the things that they want to do, Rick Scott's 11-point plan to destroy Social Security, you go down the list, I find none of that acceptable. But on this, they're signaling that their base wants this too. So this is, again, somewhere where we can come together and put down the red hat and the blue hat and start picking up that hard hat.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. And, one thing that I know these senators, and this is a related topic, but one that is open up to a lot of discussion. Several of these senators in particular want to try to build bridges between the Republicans and conservatives and the working class, right? And so, the rest of their policies generally don't represent that, I will say, right? If they had strong support for labor unions and the right to organize and better wages and benefits, feel a little bit differently about it, but it's certainly part of that effort as well. But I do think that Chuck Schumer has actually been a China hawk for a long time. He had a China currency bill with Lindsey Graham, 15 years ago that I remember, and obviously Sherrod Brown and others. And so I do think there's the potential for some meeting of the minds here. As we look ahead, but I'm glad that this is a topic of conversation, much more fruitful than some of the other topics of conversation that they're going to be having.
Oh, absolutely. No, because I think both of us are old enough to remember there used to be pro-labor Republicans. There used to be members of the Republican Party who stood up for prevailing wage and for smart policies that help working people. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show here with Scott Paul. Scott's the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. AmericanManufacturing.org is their website if you want to check out more on what they do. And I want to change gears a little bit because I made reference a little bit ago that we're at war with China. It's just a different war. It's an economic war. They've been stealing our technology for years, and doing it without recourse. And look, I know NPR has done a bit on this as well, that we spend all this money on patents and technology and research and development, and it ends up getting stolen or taken by someone else. And yet we haven't done an awful lot about it. How do we address this?
Yeah, it's a great question, and this is a little bit wonky, but there's a lot of federally funded research that occurs, and there are hundreds, in fact, there's thousands of patents that are derived from that federally funded research. And the way that it works, that if a private sector company wants to take that patent and manufacture, there's some rules that they have to follow. One of those rules is supposed to be they need to make it in the United States of America, if at all possible. Okay, and this has been the law for a couple of decades, actually, but it is widely ignored, not a priority for any of the agencies. They routinely sign off on waivers on this. They've been doing it for decades. It's not a Democratic or Republican thing. It's everybody.
It's a swinging door thing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so NPR uncovered a case where there was this great, where federal researchers had spent 6 years, like $15 million, coming up with a new battery technology using a compound called vanadium. So it's a vanadium redox battery, and exciting because it could basically provide a lot of battery storage and then power something, in an urgent situation for a long period of time. Remarkable technology. Unfortunately, it got licensed right away to a company that said, we're going to make it in China, and the Energy Department looked the other way. We lost jobs. We lost capability. China gained capability. But this came to light thanks to an investigation and a bipartisan team, including Tammy Baldwin, Marco Rubio, Rob Portman, got a law passed that said we're going to really enforce this. and we're going to start with Homeland Security, and we're going to move out from there to other agencies. But I do think that it's one of those things that, look, we spend a lot of money on federally funded research. We should, because there's some extraordinary things that come out of that. But we got to make it in America, you know. And it's just one of those jaw-dropping things. You're like, how is this even possible? But again, lawmakers are stepping up to the plate. I think we're going to make some progress, but it's only because some sunlight was shed on what was happening behind the scenes here.
Is it the last line of questioning I've got for you? Because this is one of those things that, you know, I keep looking for, that thing that's going to bring us together as a country. War and bad times seems to be, you know, I think, you know, Pearl Harbor, I think 9/11, you know, those are the times when we came together the most. We're in an economic war, I believe, with China. They've been robbing and stealing and their mercantilist tactics and have been crushing us, and our cities are hollowed out. They didn't drop bombs, at least not, the ones that come out of planes, but economic ones that have caused real harm and damage. Is this not the kind of discussion we need to have? Now, I saw a Republican legislator the other day said that he thinks this Mike McCall from Texas. He says that he thinks, you know, within a couple of years, a war with China in 2025 is likely. I don't know if that's dangerous speak or if that's preparing people for the reality of what has to happen. I don't know, but I'm curious your thought.
Yeah, I'm not that much of a international security strategic kind of chess master to know exactly what's going to happen. But I think the scenario that's being presented is a very real and possible one. And it's kind of based on this idea that there are going to be elections in Taiwan to elect a president there. And if it's not a president that the government in Beijing thinks they can work with then China may decide we got to go in. This is the time. And that would put it in about two years or so. And so that is, you know, incredibly frightening to think about. But at the same time, our military has to be prepared. And we have to do everything we can to deter China from making that choice, because it would be a tragic one for not only Taiwan, but for China. It's something that we'd want to avoid. But it is a it's on the table, because that's what Beijing has said, you know, fundamentally.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I get my troll farm folks saying this is all Biden's fault because we're standing up to China and we're doing stuff. So Biden's Biden's making this happen.
Yeah. No. I mean that's certainly not true at all. And you look at, you know, if you look at the harshest rhetoric, it tends to come from the right on that. You know, it's interesting, if you look at the effective actions, it's coming from Biden and how he's preparing us both here at home by building up our own capabilities and also, again, having smart sanctions to ensure that, if China is going to develop from a technological point of view, it's not going to be because they're taking our stuff and doing it. So, it's not Biden warmongering. In fact, I think that they want to do everything possible to avoid something like this. But at the same time, got to be prepared.
Got to take care of the home.
And those are the steps that that the administration is taking right now.
There you go. I'm right there. Scott, I appreciate the time as always. Thanks so much, and keep up the great work.
All right. Right back to you, Rick. Thanks so much.
Appreciate it. Our good friend Scott Paul. Make sure you check out the website, AmericanManufacturing.org. We'll get links out on social media. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. What policies should we be pursuing? Want to hear it? Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Okay. Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1865. That was the day the United States Congress passed the 13th Amendment to the Constitution, abolishing slavery. President Abraham Lincoln had already issued the Emancipation Proclamation, but there was worry that the proclamation, an emergency wartime measure, would not stand up in the courts after the war had ended. The introduction of the amendment first occurred in 1864 as the Civil War raged on. That meant that only Northern legislators were present to debate the issue. Despite this, the amendment failed to pass the House of Representatives. Determined to ensure its passage on the second try, President Lincoln made the amendment part of the National Republican platform for the presidential election. He lobbied heavily for the bill and was able to win enough support for its passage. The New York Times described the scene after the vote in the House of Representatives, writing, "No attempt was made to suppress the applause, which came from all sides. Everyone feeling that the occasion justified the fullest expression of approbation and joy." The final amendment read, "Neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist in the United States or any place, subject to their jurisdiction." The amendment then had to be ratified by 3/4 of the states. The ratification marked a fundamental change in the labor system of the United States. No more would the nation be divided by free labor and slave labor laws. Kentucky did not officially ratify the 13th Amendment until 1976, and Mississippi did not follow until 1995. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Reality is we've got a real China problem, and we've had it for a very long time. The problem is greed. It's been greed. Corporate greed got us there. Our greed got us there. And, you know, I listen to people, "Oh, you know, I used to be able to buy stuff. When Trump was president, prices were low." Yeah, China wasn't shut down. Again, you know, something that Biden has no control over. Corporate America was gouging, just not at the rate that we're gouging now. And oh, by the way, you know, and I had someone, you know, remind me of this the other day, that after World War II, there was all that pent-up demand because people went through the war and didn't buy anything. My grandmother used to tell me that they would take a black, that eyeliner stuff, the mascara, whatever that is, with the pencil, and draw lines up the back of their legs to make it look like they were wearing nylons and stockings, but they didn't because they didn't have any of that stuff because you needed it for the war effort. There was massive inflation after the war. And it was how things were dealt with differently. We had labor unions that fought for higher wages so that people could afford the prices. We had strong government investment that built housing and all kinds of things that helped bring that down, to help meet the demands. We don't have those things now. What we've got is greed merchants who want to do everything they can do to hold on to the power that they have and manipulate the anger. Because look, I go to the store and I look at my grocery bill, angry too. But not angry at Biden, not angry at the worker who's asking for a raise. Angry at the corporations who are gouging our eyes out. That to me is where we should be focusing. But it was smart policies. And I go back to that FDR era, that inflationary period after World War II of people going and going, "Hey, it's party time." And my grandmother, you know, told me, you know, right after the war, it was party time. Life was great. People were buying cars. People were buying houses. I mean, it was the GI Bill had infused a huge amount of money into a working poor that had never been there before. My grandparents, when my grandfather got back from World War II, they were homeless. They were sleeping in their car. Now they got married, you know, for the old fashioned reason, they had to. And, you know, grandma's, you know, my great grandfather threw them out. But they were homeless. And those years right after the war were boom years. Bought a house, bought cars, had their families, and didn't do it under massive debt. Why? Because the wages that my grandfather was earning were going up. He started off making 17 cents an hour, shoveling coal off the back of a coal truck 12, 14, 16 hours a day with no overtime. Smart policy raised that minimum wage up to a quarter in 1935. Smart policy got him overtime after 40 hours. Unions got him overtime after 8 hours. Built a solid life.
You're listening to WISS 1100 AM Berlin, W252 DR Oshkosh, and WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay.